There's only one story in the entire New Testament about the childhood of Jesus. As a 12-year-old boy, Jesus had come to Jerusalem with his parents to celebrate the Passover, when Jews commemorate the deliverance of the Hebrew slaves from Egyptian bondage under Moses' leadership. But as the family headed back to Nazareth once the holiday was over, Jesus was nowhere to be found among the company of travelers. In a panic, his parents raced back to Jerusalem to look for him. Then 3 days later, Mary and Joseph finally found Jesus in the temple, discussing theological questions with the teachers whose company he had sought out. This is a famous painting of this incident. Not surprisingly, his mother scolded her son. "Why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been worried sick and looking everywhere for you." In reply, Jesus makes a puzzling remark. "Why were you looking for me? Didn't you know that I would be in my father's house?" Luke tells us that although his parents didn't understand what their son meant by these words, Mary treasured all these things in her heart. If I had been lost for 3 days when I was 12 years old, only to have my parents find me sitting in a church talking about theology with the ministers, like Mary, my mother might also have treasured these things in her heart, but I certainly would have been grounded for a week. I've always liked this story because it reminds me a lot of myself growing up. When I was 13 years old, just 1 year older than Jesus was in this story, I attended a United Methodist summer camp in Wrightwood in the mountains above San Bernardino, where I met a young minister who impressed me with his ability to engage me in theological conversation in a way no adult had ever done before. He treated me with great respect, exactly the way a teenager yearns to be treated by adults. He took all of my questions about God with complete seriousness. He also said some things that were very insightful, even if they weren't very easy for me to understand at the time. For instance, I remember how my mind had to work overtime just to understand his answer to one of the questions I had asked him about the Bible. I spent the entire week pondering it. When I finally grasped what he meant, it was as if a light in a dark room had suddenly been turned on. I had never met a minister as intelligent as he was. I not only asked him questions, he asked me questions. It was during that week at camp that he asked me, "Have you ever considered becoming a minister?" We know that as an adult, Jesus became a theological teacher in his own right. That's why this story about his childhood is so revealing, since it gives us a glimpse into who he already was as a boy. His comment, "Didn't you know that I must be in my father's house?" can also be translated as, "Didn't you know that I had to be concerned with the things of my father?" That is, didn't you know that I was preoccupied with all the questions of theology, such as, who is God? What is God's will? How do we interpret the law of Moses? What does God expect of Israel? What about the Gentiles, the non-Jews? Will they also be saved? Before Jesus became a good teacher, he had been a very good student. Before he answered the questions that others asked him about God, he had posed his own questions about God to others. Indeed, in this story, Jesus is depicted as an ideal student, listening to the teachers and asking them questions. Listening and asking. For their part, the teachers were amazed at his understanding and at his answers. And this shows us that the teachers also asked questions of him. Not only did Jesus pose his questions to the teachers, they posed questions to him. These Jewish teachers clearly treated the boy Jesus with the utmost respect. They could see how smart he was and how much potential he had to become a great rabbi himself someday. And so they took him and his questions with complete seriousness. Teaching and learning occur whenever there is genuine dialogue and conversation, when people feel free to ask their own questions and are willing to let other people ask them questions in return. Through dialogue and conversation, we learn by asking questions and by being willing to take seriously the questions of others. The Jewish tradition in which Jesus was raised has always placed great value upon learning and upon the importance of dialogue, conversation, even debate and argument as a necessary part of the religious life. In fact, the Jews so relish intellectual debate with one another in pursuit of learning the truth about God that they even tell a joke among themselves about their willingness to argue multiple points of view and to explore every side of an argument. Two Jews, three opinions. Unfortunately, however, we Christians haven't done so well in this regard. Not everybody feels they're allowed to ask their questions about God in church. Many people in churches are told that they shouldn't ask questions, since questions can lead to doubt, and good Christians aren't supposed to have any doubts. Indeed, faith is often described as the opposite of doubt, so having doubt means that you lack faith. But I think this is a very serious misunderstanding of faith. Doubt should be seen as a necessary element in the life of faith. Moreover, if you aren't allowed to ask any questions, how can you ever learn anything? How can you test the truth of your religious questions? How can you test the truth of your religious convictions if questioning is prohibited? Yet too often, churches suppress the kind of free and open dialogue that would encourage us to ask our questions about God and the Bible. Instead, they promote blind faith. My father once told me that I shouldn't ask so many theological questions and that I should simply believe what the Bible says. He had heard that I had been asking our youth minister some pretty tough theological questions one Sunday evening at Methodist Youth Fellowship, and he was angry with me. You can imagine then just how refreshing it was for me to meet that other young minister at summer camp who was not at all put off by my tough questions. But to my father, my theological questions were an affront to God. After I had become an adult myself, however, I suddenly remembered something odd and puzzling about my dad because it completely contradicted his own explicit statements to me. What I remembered was this. My father could never understand the doctrine of the Trinity, namely that the one God is somehow also three, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So every time my father had the opportunity to do so, he would ask a question of a minister to have the minister explain the Trinity to him. Wait a minute. The same man who told his precocious son not to ask any difficult theological questions was asking his own theological questions every chance he got. What a contradiction between precept and example. What a mixed message. Obviously, my dad had his own doubts about things he had learned in church that led him to ask his own theological questions. So why did he tell me not to ask so many questions? I don't really know the answer, but I suspect it is this. I think my father was afraid that if either of us asked too many questions, we wouldn't have any faith left. Behind the impulse to silence all theological questioning is fear, fear that we will lose our faith. But what if the opposite is the case? What if faith can only grow strong and be deepened in an environment where questions are encouraged? What if dialogue, conversation, debate, and even argument about theological matters are essential to a robust faith? The example of my dad shows that Even Christians who say we should just believe and not ask questions have doubts and questions of their own, whether they acknowledge this fact or not. I was a professor of theology at a seminary for a number of years, training future ministers. I noticed that there were two types of students in my classes: those who fearlessly ask questions in their pursuit of the truth about God, and those who just wanted to get through their ministerial training without risking their faith by asking any hard questions of themselves or others. Some really wanted an education, whereas others just wanted a degree. Those who really wanted a theological education gave themselves wholeheartedly to the give and take of dialogue, conversation, even debate and argument. Those who pursued the truth about God threw themselves into the questions. The others, who were afraid of risking their faith, didn't engage the questions deeply. They merely wanted to know the correct answers so that they wouldn't have to think for themselves. Typically, this group of students wanted to know my opinions on various theological issues because they assumed that then they'd have the correct answers to the questions they'd be asked on the final exam. But I never gave them the easy answers they wanted. A good teacher assists students to think well, but refuses to do their own thinking for them. That's the kind of teacher Jesus was. He forced others to think for themselves. In the second story, we see Jesus as an adult. Once again at the temple, after he has staged a protest against its corruption by other religious leaders. For this reason, he has made enemies, and they are out to get him. So we are told that certain people were sent to trap him in what he said. They asked him a question: is it permissible according to the law of Moses to pay taxes to Caesar, the Roman emperor? Now, they think they've asked Jesus a question that he can only answer in one of two ways, but whichever way he answers it, they've got him cornered. In his answer to this volatile political and religious question, he will either arouse the opposition of the Roman occupying authorities, or he will ignite the indignation of his fellow Jews who resist Roman rule. On the one hand, if he says that the Jews shouldn't pay taxes to the Romans will arrest him and probably execute him. On the other hand, if he says that Jews should pay taxes to the Romans, he might be killed by a Jewish lynch mob that considers him a traitor to Israel. So they await his answer to their question so they can trap him in his words. But before they ask him their question, they acknowledge Jesus as a teacher and begin to flatter him. "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality, but teach the way of God in accordance with truth." Now, even though they don't mean a word of what they've said, they've actually given a good description of what makes someone a good teacher of theology. Listen again to their words: "Teacher, we know that you are sincere." A good teacher is sincere. That is, someone who is genuine, authentic, not phony. A good teacher is a real person who can be counted on to be honest and forthright, not duplicitous or manipulative. A good teacher is there for students to help them learn. "Teacher, we know that you show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality." A good teacher is not a people pleaser, is not looking for the praise or approval of other people. A good teacher does not treat students differently depending on their rank or status. "Teacher, we know that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth." A good teacher is committed to the truth above all else. And that, by the way, is why a good teacher is not a people pleaser and is not out for praise or approval. A good teacher is committed to teaching what is true about God and teaching students how to know which beliefs about God are true. So how does Jesus, whom his opponents acknowledge to be a good teacher, answer their question that's designed to trap them? He refuses to give them the easy answer they want him to give. He says neither pay taxes to Caesar nor don't pay taxes to Caesar. Instead, he gives them something to think about. He articulates a theological principle. Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar, and to God the things that are God's. He has given his answer to their question, but it's not one of the two answers they expected from him. Rather, he's thrown the question back into their laps. By answering that they should give to Caesar the things that belong to Caesar, and to God the things that belong to God, they now have to ask themselves, what things belong to Caesar and what things belong to God? As a good teacher, Jesus has taken their question seriously. Indeed, he's taken it far more seriously than they intended it. But he's refused to give them an easy answer. He's forced them to think for themselves. We are told that his opponents were utterly amazed at what he said, just as earlier it was reported that the whole crowd was spellbound by his teaching. Many people don't want to do the hard work of thinking for themselves, especially when it comes to the questions of theology. That's why they gravitate to churches that tell them not to ask too many questions, since questions imply doubts, and doubt is antithetical to faith. But this is not the model we have of Jesus in the New Testament. As both a student and a teacher, Jesus asked lots of questions. He engaged in deep thinking himself, and he encouraged others to do the same. He gathered 12 disciples around him whom he could teach. The word disciple means student, so we would be correct in speaking of Jesus and his 12 students. He taught them so that they could become teachers of others. Good students become good teachers, but good teachers never cease to be students themselves. As the Methodist theologian Schubert Ogden has put it, good teachers are above all good students who are equally at home in asking their own questions as in understanding and appreciating the questions of others. They cultivate an atmosphere of free and fearless questioning where people can trust that their own questions will be respected and taken seriously, so no one will say to them, don't ask questions, just believe. One of my students at the seminary was Jay Baker, the son of televangelist Jim and Tammy Faye Baker. When I met Jay, he was a young man struggling to make sense of the debacle of his family's television empire, since, as you may recall, his father was sentenced to a term in federal prison, while popular culture made fun of his mother's eye makeup. Jay came to the seminary because he desperately needed to find a teacher, a good teacher, someone who was sincere, impartial, and truthful. After having grown up in the exceedingly narrow-minded world of right-wing Christianity with people such as Jerry Falwell, Jay was trying to discover what, if anything, in his religious upbringing was true, or whether he should simply leave Christianity behind. And so we began our teacher-student relationship, which lasted for a few years until I left Minnesota to move back to California. During that time, I watched Jay's transformation as he went from being someone who was wounded, uncertain, and confused into being someone who is strong, certain, and clear in his own mind as to who he is as a person in his own right, distinct from his parents, and why his understanding of Christian faith is different from theirs. Alas, there are many Jay Bakers in our world who are victims of churches that insist upon blind faith with disastrous results. Such people would appreciate the opportunity to become good students if only they could find good teachers who take their questions seriously. As we ponder what it is that Christ Church by the Sea has to offer our community, we might do well to lift up the fact that ours is a church where people are encouraged to ask their theological questions freely and without fear of feeling ashamed. Churches like ours might be in the minority these days, since we have witnessed a dramatic upsurge in right-wing Christianity that shuns critical thinking and honest inquiry. But if Jesus is really our guide, as all Christians claim he is, then we should always aspire to be both good students and good teachers, just as he was, asking and listening, respecting the truth that the ability to pose questions is one of the distinctive marks of being uniquely human. And so to suppress critical thinking in the name of blind faith is both anti-human and anti-Christian, and it goes against the clear witness of the New Testament. So then, let us be known as a church of good students and good teachers, where all are invited to join us in open dialogue and conversation about any and all theological questions they may have. Amen.